Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we're talking about standing out in a crowd, differentiation in cannabis branding. And we are joined by the CEO of Wick & Mortar, Jared Mirsky. Jared, thank you for being here with us this evening.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be invited onto your show.
Well, before we get into the meat of cannabis branding differentiation, which is a hugely important topic in the new landscape that is the cannabis industry, I want to talk about you, Jared. Let's talk about your journey, your path to creating Wick & Mortar and ultimately becoming a force, if you will, in the cannabis industry.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, when I started Wick & Mortar, it was, nearly 12 years ago. And we weren't called Wick & Mortar then. You know, we were called Online Marijuana Design. I hate to say it, but you know, that name worked really well 12 years ago when there weren't any ancillary businesses in the cannabis industry, you know, building brands and helping them go to market. So it's been an interesting journey, you could say, to say the least. Wick & Mortar, you know, we're the largest cannabis-focused branding and marketing firm in the country, if not the world. We were the first, certainly. It's been a pleasure and an opportunity to have had the chance to, you know, work with as many companies as we have. When I started, you know, my mission from day one was and is to always change the perception of cannabis on a global level, one brand at a time. And so, that's what I set out to do.
Well, and we so appreciate everything you've done, and you've produced so much wonderful content. If you go to YouTube and you look up your channels, it's just fun to go and see all the things that you're doing. But there's something that when we were preparing for this recording that we talked about that I want to highlight, which is this industry is maturing. As you mentioned, when you started out, you had a name that was, it worked at the time. But now, as this industry has matured, there needs to be a lot more thoughtfulness, creativity, and just a different essence and flavor to things. And so let's talk about how crowded the cannabis industry has become from a brand perspective, from a consumer packaged goods perspective. It is very difficult for a brand to stand out and to capture market share. So give us a peek behind the curtain that is Wick & Mortar and tell us how important it is to your clients and in the work that you do to create these creative, thoughtful strategies for cannabis marketing.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I appreciate you asking that question, just because it's a thoughtful one, and I appreciate you, plugging my YouTube. It's certainly fun creating all of that content. In fact, I'm just launching my own podcast right now. It's called Rebranding Cannabis. So far, I've interviewed, Ricky Williams, Alyssa Boston, Chauncey Leopardi. I don't know if you're familiar with the Sandlot, but Quint. So it's been fun to create, especially as we're talking with each of our guests about subject matters, just like the question you asked me. So to get to it, one of the things that I've obviously recognized is there's a huge saturation of brands that try to be everything to everyone. When you look at the CPG world, the brands that win tend to have the most niche focus on a specific demographic or target market. You know, you look at, P&G or Hershey's or any of these, large brands, and, you'll notice that they have a parent company and they've got subsidiaries. Well, there's a reason why they have sub-brands, and it's because they know that one brand can't rule them all, right? So it's important to diversify and segment brands based on who your target market is, as well as the products that you're selling. So, when I look at, I think this applies to CBD just as it does to THC. But, video gaming as an example, right? I've never seen a brand that focuses on, gamers. Gamers, the average video game player is between 35 and 40, and they make about $80,000 a year. Well, that seems to me like a really great market to cater to based on the fact that everyone's at home sitting on their asses playing video games, and it's now becoming a sport. So thinking about how to build brands that focus on growing trends and understanding and identifying, you know, these areas and opportunities as they relate to advancements in the cannabis industry, as well as building communities and a lifestyle brand, right? People constantly say, oh, I have a lifestyle brand. It's not a lifestyle brand just because you call it one, right? You have to build a community. You can't just come out of the gate and say, oh, I have a lifestyle brand. That's just not how it works. You know, it's really a matter of, you know, identifying, you know, what your products do and who they serve. So if, for example, I was looking to, you know, develop a strategy around how I was going to identify the different experiences as they relate to the strains I've chosen for my products. Well, I would, you know, if it was focused on video gaming, I might have like, you know, pause, reset, play, right? And those might be my intended experiences as they relate to the demographic I'm focused on. But so many brands themselves also rely on strain specificity, when in fact strain specificity is one of the most complicated ways of branding yourself, when most consumers have no idea what the hell each strain does, given there's hundreds and hundreds of them. So much like technology and websites when it comes to user experience and user interface, the same rules should be applied to packaging and the way that you present the names as they relate to the experience of your brand. So there's a huge disconnect between, you know, I think the oversaturation of brands and the companies that are branding themselves the right way the first time. So that makes sense.
No, it definitely makes sense, Jared. And it really is great to talk with you. You know, you put your money where your mouth is in a lot of ways. And what I mean by that is when I think of PR, when I think of branding and just an agency such as yours, I think of Wick and Mortar. And I think of that name. Tell us, what's the inspiration from that name? What was that aha moment when you said, this is what we're going to call ourselves? Because you're not just a face in a crowd. You stand out, which, again, is you putting your money where your mouth is, telling your clients before they even come in the door, this is what I can do for you.
Well, I think there's, you know, it's twofold. You know, I spent a lot of time building my personal brand and then building the brand of Wick and Mortar. So having the influence of both certainly made it a lot easier to maneuver through the industry with respect to developing relationships and earning business from them as well. So it's been certainly an uphill battle, but it's definitely one worth fighting for because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, changing the perception of an industry is not an easy thing to do. However, it is certainly something I intend on leaving as part of my legacy, because this industry is important to me. I see how many lives it saves. I see how many, you know, people are just much happier. Now, to kind of get to your other question of how Wick and Mortar, the Wick and Mortar name originated, you know, when I had chosen the name Online Marijuana Design, you know, it was of the similar approach of perhaps that of like a Dollar Shave Club, right? It was straight to the point. There were no businesses, ancillary businesses in the cannabis industry, really, other than like hydroponic shops and High Times. So, you know, we had to be very, very obvious. But to your point, the industry's matured. And so how do you evolve in a maturing market? You rebrand. And it's perfectly okay to rebrand. We've rebranded ourselves, and we've rebranded hundreds of companies over the years simply because they fall into, you know, one of the many faux pas. You know, they call themselves Canna something or Weed This or 420 That, or they got green in their identity and pot leaves all up in their logos. And so, you know, it's a mistake most people make, and it's no fault of their own. It's just, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So I'm here to teach you what you do know or what you should know. But Wick and Mortar, you know, stemmed from, you know, brick and mortar, obviously, you know, bricks being the foundation and the mortar being the glue that holds the bricks together. So, you know, we see branding as the foundation, you know, services we provide as a foundation of building a company, providing them with stable infrastructure to support the decisions they make, you know, as they move through the creative process, which is, you know, evolving every day. And, you know, when you think of Wick, it's, you know, it burns. it's a part of hemp also. And so it's also the cleanest way to smoke weed. but, you know, we felt like, you know, Wick would be a great tie and nod to the cannabis industry as it relates to, you know, what we do. And so, you know, we really just felt like it suited us well based on another factor. And that was when we rebranded, we really wanted to make sure that we chose a name that felt like it stood the test of time and that we felt and that it felt like we've been around for a long time. Because to go from a company that's been around for, we were around for 7 years or 8 years before we rebranded, you know, we wanted to make sure that we still felt like it, there was the feeling that we were still, you know, an older company was there, if that makes sense. We had lineage and heritage. And so that was why we also chose Wick and Mortar, because we felt like it gave that feeling.
Well, it's a great name. And this idea of a global packaging language and how the cannabis industry and all of these brands in cannabis have almost pigeonholed themselves. I think about driving around Denver, especially true a couple years ago, but even still today, all of the green pot leaves, all of these dispensaries and all of these cannabis products, that they're all tapping into the same language, and they're all trying to find a new way to define themselves, a new way to, as you said, a lot of people go towards this lifestyle brand, but it's one thing to actually create a lifestyle brand. It's another thing to just call yourself a lifestyle brand, which I think we can all agree that a lot of companies do indeed kind of do that. And I would put to you, when you make this great point, other industries, beer, milk, wine, they have global packaging language. There's something that consumers rely on. It's in our collective consciousness. When we see that, we know what that product is. What is the new world order for cannabis products? What is this new landscape, and what can we start to move toward? What is it? Health and wellness? Is it recreation, for example? Kind of taking a play out of like the REI playbook.
I know where you're going with this. You must have watched my video on YouTube recently.
I might have. I can't say for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, the answer to that question is, you know, at the end of the day, there's this global packaging language that, you know, many CPG brands share: milk, wine, beer, coffee. And it's universal. I call it a universal global packaging language. And what's unfortunate but fortunate for the cannabis industry is that we can't really fall into suit with the same language or vernacular as those other industry types, primarily because cannabis is so unique. We fall into three categories: wellness, medical, and recreational. And because there's no other product on the planet that I know of that seeps into all three categories, it makes it very, very difficult to develop a universal global packaging language that allows each of those, you know, market segments to capitalize on offering consumers a more simple way of understanding or identifying what the products were. Now, there once was indica, sativa, and hybrid, and that was what worked. But that became a bit null and void when people realized, well, shit, everything's a hybrid. And then everyone started calling it indica dominant or sativa dominant. But then that actually became a bit null and void when people realized, well, shit, the only way people can identify whether it's indica dominant or sativa dominant is if they smoke it and tell you it is. I don't know what kind of science that is, but that's not the kind I believe in. So, you know, they're all hybrids. And at the end of the day, you know, each of us are going to experience, you know, cannabis in different ways. In fact, you know, one of the biggest misconceptions is that, you know, these experiences that these strains, quote unquote, give you, it's not a lie by any means, but you're not obtaining 100% of the strain's intention behind what the strain specificity is supposed to do. So you've got this thing called decarboxylation. We all decarb cannabis. When you heat it up, you smoke a joint or you roast a bowl, you're decarbing cannabis. Well, while you're doing that, you're also losing about 70 to 80% of the plant's original profile. So you're only ever really getting about 20 to 30% of that quote-unquote intended experience. And so that makes it extremely difficult to be you know, specific as it relates to the actual intentions as they relate to the strain. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And, you know, when you talk about the consumer experience, and when you mix that with, you know, what you do for a living in terms of branding and marketing, plus, the word ingenuity comes to mind. And, you know what I'm talking about when we talk about ingenuity combined with necessity. I'm talking about apples. I'm talking about beer cans. I'm talking about bananas or carrots or newspaper. I'm talking about Starbursts. Talk a little bit about your ingenuity in that respect.
So I did a video where I got very stoned and thought it would be fun to build a bong out of Starbursts, MacGyver style. You know, my girlfriend's son, you know, bought a tub of Starbursts, and there's no way I was going to eat all of them. So we were thinking, what can we do with all these Starbursts? Because this kid's going to be on a sugar high if we give him any more. So we thought, let's build a Starburst bong and film it. And that was actually the first time I had ever built one, which is why I think it also took so long. No, that was fun. That was fun. I like getting creative. You know, I think, I'm a hobbyist, so love using my hands, playing guitar, drums, building shit, you know, working on cars. So it was just another fun thing to do.
Jared, I have to ask you, after you had completed the bong and you had smoked out of it, did you consume those Starbursts? Were they still good? Or were the Starbursts then defunct?
I ate a few, not going to lie, but they were pretty funky. My hands were extremely sticky. And, it was a mess. But it was totally worth it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, Jared, you know, just to bring it back for a second to kind of your story and your path, if you could maybe just give us a couple of highlights over the last decade or so that you've been in this industry, as Bob, I'm sure, knows, and is kind of common for people to say, you know, being in this industry for 10 years, that really is the badge of an OG. That is the early days. What are some of the things that have stood out to you along the way?
Gosh, just staying in business. You know, during the roughest waters, you know, when Jeff Sessions was sticking us around, and I say us as in like the cannabis industry, you know, that was a bit of a struggle. You know, we had a lot of downtime then because clients were, you know, very, very skeptical about doing anything at that point as far as spending money was concerned, primarily because, I mean, gosh, the industry was, wasn't looking too pretty. You know, there was a lot of doubt as to whether or not cannabis would be, would continue to grow on the legal scale that it was as it relates to each state. But, that was an interesting time. Some highlights though, you know, I think when we did, the documentary in Humboldt, so if you go to ahumboldtstory.com, you can check that out. We filmed a 20-minute documentary. That was a pretty fun project. I think a lot of the traveling I've gotten to do, as it pertains to all of the conferences I speak at and such. So that was fun, you know, doing 50 or so of those a year. It's a lot of traveling. I was barely home, but man, did I love it. It was like every conference was a vacation. It's work, but a little mini vacay too. You know what I'm talking about.
I see when you say work, you put air quotes up there. I saw that through the microphone.
I did. No, those are smoke quotes, actually.
Yeah, that's even better. Even better. But isn't this industry sort of tailor-made for a COVID era? What I mean by that is when you talk about content creation, we've always heard content, content, content. You specialize in that. You look at ways to get information out there in different media formats. But considering we can't travel, we can't all go to these conferences, at least for the time being, and things have seemed to move virtual, isn't this industry tailor-made for it? Isn't that really what you do for a living? Comment on that. It is. Because so many people lament the fact that we can't get together, but it's not because we can't do business together anymore. It's because we can't see each other, which is just as equally as the reason why we always get on an airplane. But at the end of the day, that's the part that's missing. We can still interact with each other, spread our message, and spread our wings.
Well, and I think it's perfect timing for those out there that are looking to engage with more people, whereas they find themselves at home with a bit more time. Start a podcast. Not that hard to do. You know, you can do an audio version first and then work your way to a video. I mean, I just jumped into the video and audio versions because I have the team and the resources. And you know, I wanted to create a strategy that allowed me to produce more content as it relates to all of my platforms. You know, I'm trying to develop an omnipresence for not only myself, but Wick and Mortar. And so when you use repurposing content strategies, and if you don't know what that is, not you guys, but, you know, everyone listening, you know, if I do a podcast or as an example, I'd record the video version and then I would extract the audio, turn that into my podcast, convert the video one into YouTube, and then chop it into 5 micro segments and then use that on Instagram and other platforms to drive it to my YouTube. And the same thing can be done with an article, a blog article, you know, and you can, you know, write an article and you read it aloud over a microphone and you record it and you upload that to the same page your blog is published so that people can listen to an audio version and you turn that into a podcast. And if there's good enough sound bites, you can, you know, you can make some cool audiograms or re-record those using video. So just some good ways to, you know, minimize the amount of time you spend developing original content when most people don't realize they have a lot of it. They just need to figure out a better way to repurpose it.
Absolutely. That's a little bit like the journey we've been on here at the Hoban Law Group and with the Hoban Minute. Jared, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. For any of our listeners who want to learn more, it's wickandmortar.com, or definitely I would highly advise going to that YouTube channel that we've mentioned a couple times, checking out some of those videos. They're all very fun, very educational, very informative, just awesome all the way around. And thank you for everything.
Appreciate
that you are
that.
Doing. You have an excellent night, man.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. And just to be clear, we have a Wick and Mortar YouTube, and then there's a Jared Mirsky YouTube. So the Jared Mirsky YouTube has content on there that the Wick and Mortar one doesn't, like, you know, our new Pop Peeves series you can check out, and a bunch of other cool stuff. So I appreciate you having me on.
Follow both. Take care, man.
Awesome. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.